You're listening to Season 2, Episode 13 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang. Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence. Hey, Storyteller Tribe! Before we get into today's interview, I wanted to thank Vermont College of Fine Arts for sponsoring today's episode. Their MFA writing program has been around for 35 years. At the end of the show, you'll find out why they're ranked one of the best low residency writing programs in the country. I'm so honored to introduce number one New York Times bestselling author Christina Baker Klein on the show today. Christina's award-winning book Orphan Train has spent over 2 years on the New York Times bestseller list and is published in over 40 countries. Orphan Train is an unforgettable story about friendship and second chances that highlights a little-known but historically significant movement in America's past. It's a powerful novel about upheaval and resilience, of unexpected friendship, and of the secrets we carry that keep us from finding out who we are. Today's episode is a super special treat for storytellers focusing on writing their own novels. Christina walks us through her writing process, her journey as a writer, how she breaks through lulls, her thoughts on writer's retreats, and what she's currently working on. If you're working on your own book, pay special attention to how Christina reads books to specifically help her with her own writings. I'm so excited about this episode because we get pretty technical on writing advice, so let's dive right in. Hey, storytellers! We have a very, very special episode today. We have Christina Baker Klein with us today, author of Orphan Train. I am so excited. Christina, thank you so much for being on the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
I am so excited to chat about your journey and your career as a writer and about your book, Orphan Train. First, I'd like to kick it off by asking you, do you believe that to be a successful author or a writer, people should go to school for it, for writing specifically?
I don't believe that necessarily, and I have friends who did not go to MFA programs. I don't think MFA programs are a prerequisite for being a published writer. However, here's what I will say. It's a lot harder to find contacts, especially if you don't live in a metropolitan area like New York or possibly Los Angeles, a few other cities, Austin, for example, like where you can run into writers and kind of have conversations about it. One of the things that MFA programs do is they provide a context for you. So you make friends with other writers and you learn about things out in the world and you have a chance to even get recommendations from people and things like that, which can really help if you're trying to craft a life as a working writer, number one. And number two, if you want to get an agent and end up with, getting sort of conventionally published. Yeah. If you really just want to publish independently, publish whether it's self-publishing or very small presses, you can kind of get away without necessarily knowing people or getting a leg up with an agent. But if you want to do all of that stuff, going to an MFA program can just make it easier because there are lots of people who are there, who are supposed to be on your side and helping you out a little bit.
That's true. You have a community, so you feel supported, and that helps a lot.
You feel supported. It does help a lot. And also, in my view, maybe not all writers just agree with this, but I have a lot of friends who are writers, and I really like being friends with writers. I do because, you know, we're all talking about
it's
books
true.
The same kind of way, and you learn things from other writers about the world of writing, about fellowships, about writing colonies, about awards to apply for, whatever. My goodness, it can help.
Could we dive a little bit into the inspiration behind Orphan Train?
My husband's grandfather was featured in an article on Orphan Train writers. He lived in North Dakota in a little town. He was president of the local savings and loan. He'd never spoken about his past. And after he died, my mother-in-law found this article about him and about these Orphan Train writers, and she had never heard of Orphan Train writers. So that was how it started. As it turned out, he wasn't on an official Orphan Train. He and his siblings were orphaned and sent on a train from Missouri. But that was how my research started. That was how I learned about it. And even though it's not widely known, the story of the Orphan Train, I was intimidated by it because I could tell it was a very big story. Though people hadn't written much about it, I could tell that I knew that the people who cared about it cared a great deal.
How long did it take for the research process?
I researched a lot even before I really began writing it in earnest. In other words, I went to Ireland, I went to 4 orphan train rider reunions, and some of that happened while I was still finishing a previous book. The whole book really took about 2 years altogether to make it happen.
Wow, that's actually pretty quick.
Yes, but it was percolating for a long time, and I had done some research. You know how it is with creative ideas, that sometimes they come and you're not quite ready for them.
Yeah.
You know, what happened was this idea came and I was sort of throwing things into a file. I was working on other books. And then finally I realized I just really needed to concentrate on it and do it if I was ever going to do it.
How do you come up with your main characters, like Vivian, for example, who's a main character in Orphan Train?
You know, when you write novels, you don't always know what your influences are until people tell you. So it's very helpful in a way to have critics who read your work and tell you what you're obsessed with. And I remember even before Orphan Train came out, someone reviewed one of my books and said that I tend to write about old ladies. I guess I do. I didn't even know that.
Nothing wrong with that. We like our old ladies.
Yeah, exactly. I seem to have a lot of old ladies in my books. So, you know, and again, I think that goes back to my grandmothers. They were Southern storyteller types, and one was from North Carolina, one was Georgia, and they just were very charismatic people, and I think I was quite influenced by them. They told a lot of stories, and from that I think I developed this sort of ideal character, an older woman who likes to talk about the past.
I read in an article that you mentioned that Vivian moves from shame about her past to acceptance and eventually
yes.
coming to terms with what she's been through. How do you plot that out for the main character in order to move the story along without digressing?
I keep inventing or reinventing the wheel as I go along. I mean, I did have note cards, but those were imperfect, although it worked for a little while. And then I had kind of an outline. I'm not the kind of writer, like a lot of mystery writers will map out a story, kind of outline a story before they've written a word. I do a lot of brainstorming, and I have a novel I've just finished that's coming out in February called Christina's World, and then I have one that I'm working on now. And for the new novel, it's kind of a big story, big canvas, and I'm just in that process of gathering information, but also figuring out characters and things like that. So I'm not exactly outlining, but I'm definitely trying to figure out how the story works, how it all fits together. So eventually I will outline. I often don't really outline until the story's already underway. So it's kind of a backwards funny process. And then at the end, I have to do a lot of stuff with dates, for example, and working backwards and making sure the months all fit together and that there's causality, that one thing leads to the next. I find that stuff pretty complicated. I just did that for the book I just finished. Some of the things that I had sort of begun thinking about in terms of, say, happening in the spring might end up happening in the fall, and then it's a different year. So there are many layers of revision, and it's not until the very, very end, even when you go through copy editing, that you catch some things that you're like, oh my goodness, how did that happen? You know, why is there, I don't know, a melting branch in this scene or something, you know?
That's a lot, like we mentioned just a few seconds ago, a lot of back and forth. How do you keep track of that?
I write longhand, first of all, which is nuts. I understand it's completely insane, but I do.
That's impressive, actually.
I write longhand. I have a lot of writer friends who write longhand, but I know a lot of people don't. I write longhand because I really like being able to look back at even things that I've kind of crossed out. And I often find inspiration there too. I know that sounds weird. So I'm sort of afraid of writing on the computer and losing things, losing track of things. I write in 50-page perforated notebooks so that I know it takes 6 pads to have kind of a hammered out first draft.
Wow. You know?
So I have one that I'm writing on, and I often write on the back of the page and stuff with some notes or ideas. But I also have another pad beside me that is kind of the bigger picture or character or structure. So I'm taking notes as I go, and I'll often go through that. But, you know, before I wrote Orphan Train, I actually had so much research, and the same for this book I just finished, that I had typed up chronologies that I used, and that was really helpful as I went, kind of a blueprint about how things unfolded, what happened to kids on an orphan train at certain stages and things like that.
Oh my goodness, I would definitely need a program to help me out. I don't know how you do it, but...
I know, I'm sure I would benefit from a program. I just have never used one. In my view, there's really no shortcut. I mean, this is thousands and thousands of hours. And when you think you're done, you're not done. And you have to dig back in. Mm-hmm. And it's... I mean, I hate to say it, but writing is just really hard. And there are some joyful moments that are, you're like, wow, this is great. And I'm so inspired. And in my case, that is not true every day. And it's certainly not true at every stage. And it is a job. It is a very hard job. And there are many times that you want to quit, or I do at least. It's tough. So I am under no illusion that the words just flow out of me and that it's all about inspiration.
There's a lot of listeners out there who get stuck, and I've received quite heartbreaking emails from listeners who say they want to give up and quit. And if there's a moment that you can remember that was really a really dark time for you, would you be comfortable sharing that and letting us know how you were able to get yourself out of it?
So I finished a draft of a book that was very difficult to write. It's called Bird in Hand. It became my fourth novel. But at the time, I had written two novels, and I turned in a draft of this book. And at first, I don't have this editor anymore, but at first, my editor was like, great, we're putting it in the pipeline. I knew it was not ready to go into any pipeline. I knew it needed serious attention. But for whatever reason, I said, oh, let's get together. We ended up having lunch. I knew we needed to talk about it. I knew it wasn't really ready. So I went to the lunch. I felt like she hadn't really read it very closely. And when we were having lunch, she asked me what else I was working on. And I kind of, almost like a Hollywood style pitch, I pitched an idea for a book that was totally different, very light in tone, very different from anything I'd ever done, not quote unquote literary as my writing usually was. Thought of it as a romantic comedy. She said, well, this was right after 9/11, and it's kind of a dark time, and your other book is pretty intense. What if we set that aside and you write this book first and then we publish that book? To hear that when you've just finished a book and you've just come up with an idea for a new book, I was like, oh my God, how is this going to work? I mean, I'm going to have to write another whole book. That's actually what we ended up doing. And it really did turn my career around, and it really did work. And it meant that I had the time then to think a lot about that book, Bird in Hand. The one that I wrote was called The Way Life Should Be. And it was a very successful book by the standards of my other book. It sold 30,000 copies or something like that. And it rejuvenated my career and it put a lot of things in place. But it was really hard at the time to hear that. It was probably the best impulse to put that aside and then come back to it.
Right.
But it was hard to go through at the time. Another thing I'll say is that there's a great line by a writer named Honor Moore. She says, if you don't put it in, you can't take it out.
Oh.
And what I like about that line is a lot of times when you're frozen, it's because, you know, the editor in your head is really loud and really kind of negative. And what that line does is it gives you freedom to just put it in and not worry about it. And because you can always edit it. And I think that's something I come back to over and over again when I feel stuck. I remember that if I don't put it on the page, I won't have anything to work with. And, you know, in my old age, I've come to trust myself as an editor. And so I really do now write more quickly and try to get the words on the page, knowing that I'll be doing a major revision, but that I am capable of doing a major revision. And so I feel like it gives me the freedom to just write. Traveling around the country and talking about this darn book so much that I am croaking most of the time. It's really bad.
But it's a great reason to be croaking, right?
Yeah, it is a good reason.
That's amazing. Why don't you let me know if there's one thing that's really exciting you about your career right now?
Okay, so I just finished a new novel called Christina's World, and I'm so excited about it. It's the story of a woman in a painting by Andrew Wyeth. I don't know if you know the painting, but it's hanging at the Museum of Modern Art. It's a woman in a pink dress sitting in a field looking at a gray house in the distance. If you Google it, you'll see a bazillion images of it. It's called Christina's World. And that painting was done near where I grew up in Maine, and it's been called one of the iconic American paintings. And it's a very mysterious picture. It's hard to see kind of what this woman is looking at, what's going on in the picture. She looks strange, but you're not exactly sure why. So I did a lot of research to find out about her real life, and I found out all this incredible stuff about her. And I've written a novel from the perspective of that woman.
Wow. So when you saw this art piece, what struck you specifically first?
The feeling was, what is this woman yearning toward? She's sort of poised in this field, and you can see she's looking at the house, but she doesn't, you can't see her face, so you don't exactly know whether she's afraid or trying to get there, trying to get away. It's hard to tell, but you have this feeling that she's yearning towards something. So that's really the question in the book, is what does she want? What is she doing there? And why is the house so mysterious? And what's going on? Ooh. And it was really exciting to work on because, as I said, her own personal history in real life is very interesting. And there is all this stuff that I was able to draw on. So I did a lot of research for that book. I loved the research that I did for Orphan Train, and I'd never written a book that required so much historical research. And so I was inspired by it. And I realized after I wrote that book, I knew a lot about America between 1900 and 1950, roughly, 1945. And so I thought it would be fun to stay in that time period and see what I could find.
Ooh. So you're not one of those people who get overwhelmed by research. You actually love it. Like, it gives you life, basically.
I thought I was one of those people. My father is a historian. I did think I was. I was like, I don't want to do all this research. Because oftentimes you don't know when to stop.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It is. And my dad said, my best advice to you is you just have to stop researching and start writing before you think you're ready. And you can always go back in and fill in the details.
Mm.
Yeah, I always think of, you know, that children's book, Harold and the Purple Crayon, where he has to draw the door and then draw the knob before he can turn the knob and go through the door. And then he has to draw the chair before he can sit in it. I always think of that when I think of researching a novel, because, you know, if you know some stuff, but you don't know others, a lot of times, like, for example, my character maybe will be wearing a dress, but what style of dress did you wear in 1937? And how many buttons did they have? And what colors were popular? And what kind of shoes did you wear? You know, you don't always know that stuff. In fact, you often don't know that stuff before you start writing. So you kind of have to go back and forth, write your way into it.
Would you write it down? Vivian wore this dress, for example, and then you fill out the rest of that scene, and then you go back in to do your research? Or in your head, you know that you need to find out what dress style first before you even write that part down?
Yeah, that's a good question. I knew that she's wearing a pink dress. And I also knew from diaries and things like that, she was paralyzed in part. So she had trouble sewing. She sewed for a long time, but then she had trouble with it. And someone helped her. She picked out this pink fabric and she made the dress. And I knew that someone had taken her to a store to find these fabrics. This was all like in the real historical record. So I looked up the store, and then I looked at the most popular fabrics of that year, 1948, to see, you know, were there any fabrics that were unavailable? Had rayon been invented? Yes, it had. There were synthetic fabrics then, but cotton was very popular. Cotton broadcloth is what she wore. So I wanted a variety of fabrics. So what I did was I started writing the scene, and then, you know, the internet is amazing. So
yeah.
I found these sites of people who collect vintage fabric and had actually carefully labeled them, showing patterns and showing colors and showing fabric choices. So I kind of began the scene, and then I did the research, and then I went back and changed it. And then later I even modified it a little bit. There's a very well-known quote from E.L. Doctorow that's not all that different from the one I said before about if you don't put it in, you can't take it out. It's just a different kind of metaphor, but or a different idea. But he says, writing a novel is like driving across the country at night. You can only see as far as the headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way. That idea that you can't see all the way through it necessarily, you can only see as far as the headlights show you, but you know the roads ahead of you. And that's what it feels like, I think, when you're writing a novel. A lot of times you have to trust the process. You have to trust that you're moving forward and that even though you can't see the whole way ahead, that you're following this path, this road. And for me, that's very helpful to keep in mind. There's so many ways to stay inspired when you're writing a book. And there's so many times that it's easy to imagine quitting. And in my case, it's usually around page, say, 120 to 150. I just feel like I've written my way into a corner. I don't know how to continue. It's a stupid idea anyway. And it was a foolhardy kind of excursion. And I should just throw it in a drawer. I just know now that I always feel that way. At some point, I always think this is probably not even a novel. I don't even know what I'm doing.
It's refreshing to hear that you go through what a lot of us go through. Thank you for being so honest about that.
Oh my gosh, of course.
And by the way, that was freaking brilliant. I'll never get that image out of my head, driving in the dark with the headlights on. Like, talk about motivating. So if I'm ever stuck, I'll just think of that. It'll pop up and it's like, nope, keep going.
Keep going.
Turn on those brights if you have to.
That is great. I'm going to use that. I'm going to quote you.
I need to know, have you worked with mentors along the way while you're working on these novels?
I've been doing this for a long time. So I have a bunch of books, as you know. I have 10 books, five yeah. novels, almost six. Almost six. Not quite
Superwoman.
Yet.
Hello.
No, not at all. Here's what I find so useful. It's not even exchanging work anymore because at this point, with my new novel, for example, that I've just finished, only my editor has seen it, which is crazy. My husband saw some of it early on. I used to share work more freely with my friends, but we all got really busy. Now I'm going to give it to two people. After it goes through line editing with my editor, I'm going to give it to a couple friends. But then it's really clean. I'm not asking them to do any major, major work on it. I just want to make sure I'm not missing something like vital. I just want a couple of sets of writer's eyes on it. What I do find though is that I really benefit from being in a community of writers. And for me, that means I'm in a group of writers, for example, novelists who are reading books by other writers and talking about them. And I find that interesting for inspiration, that we read books, either classics or contemporary books that are for some reason in the news right now or are getting a lot of good press or that other people are reading. And it helps to talk about them with other writers because writers read differently. You know, it's like I always say to my students when I'm teaching, it's you should be reading other books the way a mechanic lifts the hood of a car and looks at the engine. How is it put together? What can you learn, you know, by looking at it? What's working, what's not working? Because that can help you with your own work. And I also find other books inspiring in terms of things like structure and writing style sometimes. For example, when I was writing that book that was pretty fast-paced, I realized that I had just read a novel called The Lovely Bones.
And yes.
In that novel, she does something very interesting, which is that every single scene begins very quickly. She jumps straight into a scene without any preamble. And I was so inspired by that. I actually went through her novel and I wrote down the first line of every scene.
Wow.
every new like chapter, basically. And then when I was getting started in the morning, I would just read through them. I didn't copy her. What I did was I found it inspiring. She would say things like, she's halfway down the stairs when she realizes she's forgotten or something. You know, in other words, she would just jump straight into the scene. In the middle of an action. Or she would say, it wasn't until she was backing out the driveway that da-da-da, you know, things like that. So I found it so helpful to jump straight into a scene without dilly-dallying and dithering around and saying, when she woke up that morning, she felt, you know what I mean? It was just so much more immediate. So that, I felt like I learned a lot from her doing that. I think we take what we need. And again, as a writer, I read ruthlessly to take what I need from other books. And I think that's really important to do. For Orphan, I had just come up with the idea, basically, told a friend about it. And a few weeks later, this friend said, hey, you know your idea? I think someone else already did it. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she said, there's this new book that's huge called Water for Elephants. And the way she described it was exactly like Orphan Trade. It's actually has nothing to do with Orphan Trade. But at the time she said, it's an old person who lives alone and some young person comes in and is telling him the story of his life. And it reminds the old person of his life on the train. So there are all these flashbacks. I was like, oh no, my God. It's the same story. So of course I went out and bought it and read it immediately. But what I found reading it is that it had nothing to do with my book, but the way that the author, Sarah Gruen, went back and forth between the past and the present was so inspiring to me. So I literally wrote down first chapter, present, this many pages, second chapter, past. I outlined her entire book. Then I copied it, kind of. I wrote chapters that were sort of in the same, you know, they followed the same format. Well, in the end, That's not how the book was. I changed things around. My chapters are like 40 pages. Hers were like 2. And I didn't go back and forth so quickly. But as far as writing the book, it was very, very helpful to me to follow her structure.
I didn't have actual training for writing, but I am a huge fan as well of Amy Tan of Joyla Club.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And my family stories are very similar to hers. And I went through Joyla Club like over and over again just to learn how to speak in different voices and make them distinct the way she's yeah. able to. So I was observing and learning from her. But in the end, like you said, it didn't turn out like that at all. It just became this whole other piece. But I had almost a Amy Tan mentor along the way.
And that's why reading for writers is so important and being inspired by other really good writers, because it can help you in all kinds of ways. I guess that would be my greatest advice, is to learn from other writers in that way. But as I say, I also have been like, I had lunch today with a writer named Matthew Thomas, who has a kind of big book right now called We Are Not Ourselves. And he's a wonderful guy. And I love being friends with him because we can talk about the business. We can talk about ideas. Was running some things by him for my new novel. And I just find it very helpful to have feedback of all kinds. And eventually he'll probably end up reading this novel, Christina's World, in the next few weeks or so. But as I say, I want to be sure it's really clean by the time I get it to him.
You said you don't show them unless it's right after the line editing with your editor.
Yeah.
Is it okay if you can explain a little bit what that is for listeners who are very much in the beginning processes of writing and are unfamiliar with what that means?
Sure. I have been working with an editor for a while. You kind of know each other and get, you know, well. And at this point, I really just show things to her. I submitted part of the novel in the fall. I wanted her to know what I was doing and just to get feedback from her about being in the right direction. And she said, great, keep going, whatever. And then eventually when I handed in a draft of the novel, her comments were big. In other words, they were things like, we really need another, say, 5 or 6 scenes that give us a sense of background in this way. You know, she said things like that. She gave me an edit letter that was really helpful, but it was sort of things like, toward the end of the book, things feel a bit rushed. Slow things down here. I'd like some dialogue, you know. In other words, giving me ideas about what and where, but in a more general way. The line edit she's doing now, this weekend actually, is now that the book is pretty much done, we hope, the way we both want it, she'll go through and very carefully, with a fine-tooth comb, make sure that the language is working. She'll probably have questions about things. There might be dates that aren't working. Some of that stuff I mentioned earlier about, do I show the snow melting and it's really supposed to be June or whatever. You know, the real nuts and bolts of that kind of stuff happens at the next stage, which is called copy editing. And that's when the publisher has hired a copy editor, and that copy editor will make sure that all the names work. And she almost does an index, keeping track of all the different stuff in the book. Did they have a Model T Ford in 1934, for example? Things like that. Fact checking and name checking and all those details. Those are all done in copy editing. But line editing is right before that. And it's when the editor is really looking at language and words.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you for explaining that. That was super helpful and very informative.
Sure.
I'd love to touch back on that group that you get together with to read these books.
Yeah.
You know what? It just reminds me of like a workshopping book club.
It is. That's right? Exactly what it is.
Have you ever been to any writers' workshops or writers' retreats?
Oh, that's a very good question. I have 3 kids, so I haven't had time to get away to do a lot of those. Now that my youngest is in high school, I have a bit more freedom. So I went to a writer's colony. I've never applied to any of those, McDowell or Yaddo or any of those, because I've never had enough time to get away like that. There's one called the Virginia Center for the Creative Arts, and they allowed me to come for a short period of time.
Mm.
In my case, a week and 2 weekends, which I've done a couple of times, was so helpful to get away and have time to really concentrate on my work. And I loved doing it. I was talking to a writer the other day. She said something that was absolutely true for me, which is that at the beginning of a book and at the end of a book, I need to kind of sequester myself away, have a lot of time to concentrate and be on my own. So it's really useful to be at a writer's colony if you can during those periods. But in the middle, I can write anytime. Like I can write on a subway, I can write in the dentist's office. When I've got a book well underway, it's easier to write the pages without needing the concentration that you need when you're just forming an idea or when you're trying to write the end, which can sometimes be hard to write.
Christina, I know that you gave us so much of your time and I'd love to wrap it up with two final quick questions. What would you like for us to look out? A book coming out? I know you were working on a couple.
So Orphan Train is in paperback, as you know. It's been out for a while. It's obviously still available. We're also doing a middle grade edition of Orphan Train for 8 to 12 year old kids. So that's coming out next year. And in February, actually on Valentine's Day, my new novel, Christina's World, will be coming out. I'm really excited about that. There's also a movie in the works for Orphan Train, and I think it's going to be 2017. That's the plan. The script is being finished right now, and then they'll get a director and casting and all of that.
Congratulations.
Yay. So thank you. So look for all of those things.
We'll wrap it up. And if you can remember any books off the top of your head that have changed your life or really helped you that you can recommend to us to check out as well?
Well, there are three classics that totally changed my life and are great influences on me. Number one, Anna Karenina. If I had to go to a desert island and read nothing else, I would bring that book because it has so many layers and you can read it over and over again and find new things in it. Number two, Middlemarch by George Eliot. These are all 19th century novels, by the way. Middlemarch by George Eliot is similarly huge, but also so inspiring. Characters are rich. She's the most brilliant writer, George Eliot, and I loved it and I've read it many times. And the third is Madame Bovary by Flaubert. He's a French writer. Madame Bovary is, in my view, an almost perfect novel. He's a stylist. His writing is gorgeous, but it's also very fast-paced, very readable. He's really smart and funny and caustic. It's just a beautiful book. So all of those are books that I've read multiple times and found tremendously influential.
Amazing. I'm so excited to check out the last one. I've never heard of that. So thank you for that recommendation. And let us know where we can find you on social media so listeners can say hi.
The best place to find me is on Facebook. I have a regular page that I kind of say yes to people on. And I have an author page where I post all kinds of stuff about books and writing and myself and my tour and things like that. So if people want to reach out to me personally, Facebook messages on my author page are the best way.
Amazing. Christina, you are so awesome. Thank you so much.
You were great. And this was a wonderful interview. And I must say, it was super fun. Thank you.
Hey, storytellers. That wraps up our episode with Christina Baker Klein. Christina, thank you so much for coming onto the show and for sharing your journey and writing advice so generously. And a special thank you to my storytellers for listening in as always. Be sure to follow Christina's latest updates on her official Facebook page at facebook.com/cbakerklein. Don't forget to head over to her show notes page for her recommended books over at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Christina Baker Klein. One more thing before we head out. I've been listening to your comments and feedback about wanting to publish your own work. I truly believe you'll want to hear what our sponsor has to offer, especially if you're a writer or a poet. Vermont College of Fine Arts has two writing programs I want to tell you about. Their MFA in Writing is one of the original low residency programs, and frankly, one of the best in the country. Writers gather at VCFA's beautiful campus for two separate 10-day residencies each year. Imagine yourself immersed in a setting much like an intense writer's retreat where you're fully committed to workshops, lectures, and readings. After the residencies, you return home and work with a dedicated faculty advisor throughout the rest of the semester. The MFA in Writing and Publishing is their very first and brand new residential program that also focuses on improving your writing and giving you the tools to thrive in the arts. Every student learns directly from agents, editors, and publishers. The cool thing is that it's a cross-genre program, which means if you're a poet, you're encouraged to learn from faculty in fiction or nonfiction. Imagine yourself learning and creating in this incredible writing community, all while living on their gorgeous campus in Montpelier, Vermont. Be sure to head over to 88cupsoftea.com/go/VCFA to learn more about these programs and about their MFA in Writing for children and young adults. Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.